every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give and select KNBA-FM, Kewaunee Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. National Native News is made possible with support from Guest House Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun. On the web at guesthousealaska.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 5 minutes, just 6 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My first guest on Juneau Afternoon today is Lance Twitchell, Hune. And Lance is putting together, or has put together, the second annual Alaska Native Studies Conference. It'll be held at UAS next week, starting Friday and running through Sunday. Lance, tell us, this is exciting. What all's going on?
Yeah, we're very excited to host this conference. The field of Alaska Native Studies has been developing really well over the past 30 years and even 40 years. It's been a struggle, but now we see a lot more material in not just Alaska Native Studies classrooms, but all throughout the universities. And so when we started talking about our programs, one of the things we realized, and with some remarks from our current administration as well, was something didn't exist for us as far as just getting together and sharing our work and really celebrating the field of indigenous knowledge in Alaska. And so we decided we would have a conference. A lot of us present at various conferences, but they're often anthropology conferences or indigenous language conferences. And so we figured we'd feel that natural gap that's right there.
Mm-hmm.
Last year in Anchorage, it was wonderful to see how many people came together talking about such a wide range of topics as well, ANCSA, indigenous languages, history, education. And so we wanted to really try and build on that momentum that we felt there. And the idea is to have a conference that rotates between University of Alaska Anchorage, University of Alaska Southeast, University of Alaska Fairbanks, and really tries to unite our Native Studies programs that are growing to show our students that are in these fields to say, here's some professionals, and this is how they present their work, so you guys can take that next level when they go to graduate school or into their own professions afterwards. So it kks off Friday, March 14th, with a symposium on Alaska Native art and literature. We're very excited about that. The idea happened last year as well. Someone stepped forward and wanted to organize something and had panels of artists talking about their work. And so our focus here is on literary works of Alaska Natives and also weaving, particularly of Southeast Alaska Natives. So there'll be weaving demonstrations. The first event starts at 1 p.m. on next Friday. That's at the Juneau Arts and Cultural Center at the Jack from 1 to 5 p.m. Admission for that event is $20. And then there'll be some weaving demonstrations, and then we have a couple of presentations on the significance of woven art, a song and dance performance by Lyle James. We'll have updates on the Walter Sobloff Center from the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, updates on the Alaska State Museum construction projects by the Alaska State Museum. And then we'll have readings by current Alaska State Writer Laureate Keuchne Nora Dauenhauer, and then the former Poet Laureate Richard Dauenhauer, and local author, playwright, activist, historian Kakwask Ishmael Ho.
Mm-hmm. This is just the kickoff for what is a 4-day three-day conference, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So what else, what happens after the kickoff?
Okay, so it's 1 to 5 there, then you grab some dinner, and you meet us back on campus at 7 p.m. in the Egan Lecture Hall for the Alaska Native Studies Conference Sound and Motion Series event, mm-hmm. which will be the Wooshja'in dancers giving a performance. And that's free, open to the public. Would love to see lots of people out there. We'll have plenty of out-of-town guests, I think, who are showing up for that event as well. And that's sort of our kickoff. We kick off with arts and culture and celebration. And then Saturday, we begin with our keynote speeches and then moving into our breakout sessions, which will be both Saturday and Sunday. We have two fantastic keynote speakers who are coming to talk about indigenous knowledge, indigenous research, and it's very powerful to look across institutions and see how indigenous research is localizing within indigenous communities. Historically, it's been someone coming in from outside the community, writing with their own perspectives, and this has benefited indigenous people for sure. But then now we're saying, well, we can tell our own stories. We could give you our knowledge. And a lot of times we can invite you in to learn our language so that you can look at how that knowledge exists in its natural true form.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very excited to be hosting this conference. Anybody, it's welcome. It's open to the public. Everybody is welcome. If you go to the University of Alaska's website, it's uas.alaska.edu or alaskanativestudies.org. You can get more information on the conference, including how to register. Registration is $130. That includes two meals, and that includes being able to see all of these different events. We've got over 40 presenters on a wide range of topics. One of the key sort of themes as well is there's a cohort of indigenous PhD students who are getting their doctorate in indigenous studies programs, particularly through the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And so it's really neat to see what's coming out of UAF and how these future doctorate holders are going to influence this whole field of Alaska Native Studies.
Mm-hmm. So there will come a time. Right now you have how many people actually in faculty positions teaching Alaska Native Study related courses at UAS?
At UAS we have one faculty member whose focus is Alaska Native languages and studies, more languages than studies.
Mm-hmm.
And so our hope is by hosting this conference and by continuing to look at what we offer at UAS is that we can continue to build on that. And one thing we really like folks to know is sometimes you hear things through different channels. And one of the things we struggle with is having Alaska Native Studies recognized as just as valuable academically, financially, philosophically, as any other field that's out there. For a long time, the field can emerge, but then it gets seen as this sort of elective or this sort of backdoor program to what your university is. But at University of Alaska Southeast, we're focused on making that an equal part of our own existence so that we can say, this is where you come if you want to study Tlingit language, Haida language, Tsimshian language. This is where you come if you want to study Anxa and what these different things mean to Alaska. And this is where you come if you want to study Northwest Coast art and formline design. So this conference is bringing together folks who have similar modes of thinking as well. These are the leaders at the Anchorage campus and at the Fairbanks campus who are really putting or continuing to put indigenous knowledge on this equal footing as everything else. And we follow in the footsteps of giants, of Oscar Coagley, Ray Barnhart, he's in a state of semi-retirement. We'll keep bugging him for as long as we can, just like we do with Richard Nora Dauenhauer here. And we look at the legacy that our predecessors have built, and we just try to fill in their footsteps and continue to be inspired by their work and to try and present it. And we're confident that our community is going to step up and really take a high level of interest in this and to welcome this conference into Juneau.
Conference begins on Friday at noon in the Jack across the street from KTOO, and this will be the first kickoff event that lasts until about 5 o'clock, and then it continues in the evening up on the UAS campus with a dance presentation, and then Saturday and Sunday, both days, breakout sessions, and your keynote speakers, Dr. Joanne Archibald, who is Associate Dean for Indigenous Education at the University of British Columbia, Vancouver, and Dr. Malia Villegas, who is Director of Research Policy for the National Congress of American Indians. You've attracted some excellent national and international talent as your speakers.
Yeah, we were very excited. Last year we had Professor Graham Smith from New Zealand, and we're continuing in that and looking at leaders in this field of indigenous studies So we're really fortunate. We're really excited about this event.
Mm. Lance Titchell, thank you so much for telling us about this. People can go to the UAS website or to you named another site.
AlaskaNativeStudies.org. And elders and veterans can attend the conference for free. We just ask that they register so we know what our numbers are going to look like.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for telling us about this.
Hi, I'm Jenny DeGrappa, the reigning Miss Alaska Latina USA 2013. I'm also the survivor of a traumatic brain injury, which I suffered as a passenger in a car accident on January 1st, 2004. Early education is important in order to facilitate the best recovery possible. Brain injuries are a big problem in Alaska. Let's change that. If you hit your head, take it seriously. March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. To learn more, please visit alaskabraininjury.net.
This is Bird Note. Imagine creating Latino-inspired dance to celebrate birds, such as the tiny calliope hummingbird, the long-billed curlew, a stately shorebird, or the gorgeous western tanager. At this time of year, these birds and others are winging their way north from Mexico. For students and adults alike, dance can pay tribute to the bird's beauty and fortitude. While having fun exercising in a Zumba class, wildlife biologist Heather Murphy realized she was experiencing a combination of dance, music, and culture that might be used to attract more Latino communities to birds and nature. So, from there, she and Rona Barron created Dancing with Birds, dance videos, soundtracks, posters for festivals, curriculum for schools. Here's Rona, followed by Elsa Esparza.
The Western Tanager is a beautifully colored songbird breeding far into northwest Canada. You'll be lucky to spot this stunning bird because the Western Tanager stays on its breeding range for as little as only 2 months and is quite elusive.
El ave tangare del oeste es un pájaro hermoso de colores que canta inmigrando hasta las orillas del noroeste de Canadá. Tendrías suerte si ves a este pájaro porque son un poco difícil de captar.
Are you a teacher? Someone who likes to dance? Someone who loves how birds connect cultures? You can download the curriculum for Dancing with Birds, including posters, soundtracks, and videos in English and Spanish. Begin at our website, birdnote.org.
It's 18 minutes after 3 o'clock. My next guest is going to be doing a presentation at the library. He is known as Jay Torres, and if you don't recognize that name, you probably recognize some of his art because he has a tendency to show up in a lot of comic places and has done a number of graphic novels as well. So Jay Torres is here to give a presentation at the library on Saturday, I believe. Is that
this evening.
This evening.
This evening,
yeah.
At 6:30, I believe.
At 6:30. Okay, good. All right. And so you've done work on Batman, but you're better known, I think. You do a lot of manga stuff. And like that. And right now you're working on a children's book called Bigfoot Boy, right? Actually a series.
Yes, it's a graphic novel series for younger readers called Bigfoot Boy. Mm-hmm. And it's about a boy named Rufus who finds a magic totem in the woods behind Grandma's house. And the totem has the word Sasquatch etched on the back of it. And when he's wearing the totem and he says the word Sasquatch, he turns into a Bigfoot. Hence the title, Bigfoot Boy.
So this is not autobiographical, though, right?
It's debatable. Maybe semi-autobiographical.
Oh, okay. So the totem you found in the woods was your ability to express yourself graphically,
yes,
I think.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's a nice way to put it.
So, were you a doodler when you were a kid? Did you?
Yeah. I was that kid who was always considered the quote-unquote best artist in the mm-hmm. class. Up until high school, and that's when I sort of decided to focus on the writing and let other people draw because I just discovered it's one of those, you know, little fish, big pond, big fish, little pond situations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when I was in the little pond, I was the big fish. Then you hit college and you discover all these amazing, more talented artists. So I focused on the writing.
Mm-hmm. which is why you're listed more as a comic book author. You worked for a while for Marvel.
Early in my career, I did some freelance work for them on the X-Men. I did a couple of issues of Black Panther. And then I was recruited by DC, and I stuck with them for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. And then you've actually, some of your stuff has been made into film.
No, it's the other way around. I've done translations or adaptations from film and television for various companies and various properties, like the Teen Titans, like Avatar The Last Airbender. And there's a, I don't know if you guys know, the Degrassi Next Generation sort of teen soap opera. So I've done stuff for them too. But actually, that's also gone the other way. I've written for the live-action drama as well.
Now, what are you going to do at the library?
I'm going to give a presentation that sort of talks about me and my career a little bit, and then I'll explain how comic book scripting is done, how comic books are done in general, the production of it. And then if there's time, we'll do a reading, hopefully with the audience helping me out. Hopefully there are kids there or some young people at heart will help me do a reading. We'd like to project the panels on screen and have people read the different parts, sort of like doing a radio drama.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a fascinating way to kind of get inside graphic novels. Those of us of a generation, of my generation, I guess, I'm a little uncomfortable reading a graphic novel because of two things. One is that the manga influence is not something that I grew up in. And the other is that I feel a little like I'm sneaking out back to read comic books. Does your audience go across age groups?
It does. It does. I see a lot of kids as well as guys in their 40s, 50s, or older who've been comic readers all their lives. I think part of it is that there's just a bit of a stigma with comics, particularly in North America. It's not the same thing in Japan or the Philippines where I was born, or Europe where comics are seen like every other, every other genre, every other format of book, like novels, prose, etc. There's no, stigma that it's a bad thing, bad for you, or only good for kids. It dates back to Frederick Wertham in the 1950s, who kind of wrote against comics and saying that there was a link between comic books and juvenile delinquency in America, and it was part of that whole. He started kind of a red scare with comics back then, and it's stuck with in the medium ever since, and it's something that we've been fighting ever since. But thankfully, because of contemporary educators and librarians, many of whom I'm meeting as I go across Anchorage and Sitka and Alaska and here in Juneau, are helping dispel the myths about comics and being bad for us or just being for kids.
One of the major phenomena that's, I think, probably made comics much more accessible to people, made graphic novels more accessible, is the fact that they make such great movies. Mm-hmm. And that has happened so consistently over the last several years. A lot of the really big blockbuster films have been based on either DC or Marvel characters coming to the big screen.
Yeah, if you told me when I was 11 years old that, this past year, we'd see an Avengers live-action movie, a Thor, Superman, and a Spider-Man live-action movie, all in the course of about a year. I would have told you were crazy. That never happens.
Yeah.
And then there was a time about in the 90s where it would happen maybe once a year, once every 2 years. And it was a real big event, very special event. And now we're kind of become jaded. It's like, oh, here comes another superhero movie. So it's a great time to be a comic book fan.
Yeah. We have a group of artists here in town that have begun a comic shop here in town called Alaska Robotics. And we had a chance to drop in there. But they have a wonderful collection. You're probably represented in there.
I hope so.
Yeah, and a lot of really interesting young themed art. It's kind of a and I think that's a precursor. I think that's a reflection of something that's happening in lots of places.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that the younger generation particularly is taking command of a lot of this stuff and saying, okay, so you can have your art store down the street, but we're going to do this.
Right,
and I
right.
think that's what's reflected there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And as I was saying, there's that old stigma of comics and comic book art as being lowbrow or not as not as valid as fine arts. Again, it's an older generation, so hopefully, you know, the kids behind us will help change that.
Jay Torres, you're obviously well-versed in your field. Looking forward to a presentation tonight at the library where you're going to be able to talk a little bit about your past and maybe even bring some people into some of your comic art. Thank you so much for coming to Juneau and bringing this along.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 7th of March, 2014. It's the birthday of the songwriter Townes Van Zandt, born 1944, into a wealthy oil family in Texas, died in 1997 at the age of 53. It's the birthday of the novelist Robert Harris, Nottingham, England, 1957, author of Fatherland, Archangel, and other novels, who said, "I think a novel is like a car, and if you buy a car and grow flowers in it, you're forgetting that the car is designed to take you somewhere else." 1994, on this day, the Supreme Court ruled that parody can be protected by the Fair Use Clause of the Copyright Act of 1976. 1857, on this day, the National Association of Baseball Players met in New York, and they decided that a baseball game should be made up of 9 innings instead of 21 runs. It's the anniversary of the Civil Rights March from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, 1965. 600 civil rights activists left Selma to march 54 miles to the state capitol. They only got 6 blocks before state and local lawmen attacked them with dogs and billy clubs and tear gas. They made it to Montgomery 2 weeks later, and by the time they got there, they were 25,000 strong. And it's the birthday of Bret Easton Ellis, born in Los Angeles, 1964, best known for his novel American Psycho, 1991, written from the perspective of a Wall Street yuppie serial killer, a novel that was condemned by the National Organization of Women and dropped by its first publisher, which guaranteed its commercial success. 1923, on this day, Robert Frost's poem Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening was published, the poem that he called his best bid for remembrance. Frost originally claimed that he wrote it all at once, but an early draft of the poem shows that it was reworked several times. He said the poem was about a December night when he drove a wagon to town with some produce from his farm to sell so he could buy Christmas gifts for his family. He couldn't sell a single thing. Evening came. It started to snow, and he had to head back home. He was almost home when he was overwhelmed by a feeling of shame, and the horse stopped, and Frost sat in the wagon, and he wept like a baby, he said. Eventually, the horse jingled its bells, and Frost pulled himself together, and he headed back home to his family. Here's a poem for today by Galway Connell, the first section of his long poem, When One Has Lived a Long Time Alone. When one has lived a long time alone, one refrains from swatting the fly and lets him go, and one is slow to strike the mosquito, though more than willing to slap the flesh under her, and one hoists the toad from the pit too deep to hop out of and carries him to the grass, without minding the poisoned urine he slicks his body with, and one envelops in a towel the swift who fell down the chimney and knocks herself against window glass and releases her outside and watches her fly free, a lifeline flung at reality when one has lived a long time alone. A poem by Galway Connell from his New Selected Poems, published by Houghton Mifflin Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Be part of a studio audience Friday for Forum at 360, Middle East to Southeast. Exchange students from Yemen, Bahrain, and Gaza talk about adapting to life in Southeast Alaska, going to American schools, and what they miss about home. Forum at 360 will be recorded for broadcast that same night at 8 p.m. on 360 North statewide TV. That's Forum at 360, Middle East to Southeast, Friday, March 7th at 5:30. Doors open at 5.
29 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host this afternoon for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest is a good friend from the University of Alaska campus, and she's going to be giving a great presentation, I'm sure, tonight out at the Glacier Visitor Center. Sherry Timoney is here, and she's a professor who studies interesting things about crabs and spot prawns out at UAS. Hi, Sherry.
How you doing, Pat?
I'm doing good. So your title of your talk is intriguing, The Secret Lives of Crabs and Spot Prawns. So have you explored these secrets from behind what a frond in the tank or something?
I would say I explored the secrets from underwater, because those are the secrets that most people can't see.
Uh-huh. Are you a diver?
I am a diver.
Wow.
So a diver since I was 17 years old.
So you go down there where the crabs and the prawns actually are.
I can watch them. I can watch them doing their day-to-day business.
Hmm. Okay. So let's see. First, we need to make sure that everybody knows that this is tonight. It's out at the Glacier Visitor Center. You do a talk at 6:30, and then you repeat that talk at 8 o'clock. So you can come to either show, folks, 6:30 or 8, which means if you want to take – we've had three events now that we know are going on tonight. If you want to take part in another one, you can probably catch both events here. Mm-hmm. So that 6:30 showing is nice because it lets you go to an 8 o'clock event if you want to do two things on a Friday night, which is kind of nice. So at 6:30 and at 8, you're going to talk about these things that crabs and spot prawns do. Let's establish crabs. So what kind of crabs are there Southeast Alaska?
In all of Alaska, there's 85 species, but most of these nobody knows about.
Okay, let's cut it down.
The ones that you know about are about half a dozen crab species: red king crab, brown king crab, blue king crab, tanner crab, snow crab, and Dungeness crab.
So
those are the ones we eat.
How do you tell the kings apart?
Well, I will show a lot of images, but the king crabs are the ones that are really difficult to hold unless you have gloves on, because they have a lot of spines.
Mm.
And the Dungeness crabs have no spines on the outside, but they have really nice claws that'll pinch you. But they look quite a bit different.
Yeah.
And even though they're crabs, they're not even related to one another. So a Dungeness crab and a red king crab are about as far apart as we are to a cat.
Hmm. And how about tanners?
Tanner crab and snow crab are related to one another. They're a little brown. They're a brown crab. We fish them right now. The fishing is probably over commercially. Tanner crabs are a lot bigger than snow crab. They're a much rounder carapace, a little lighter brown than the Dungeness.
And one of the things that you're going to do tonight is show some images so we can walk away from your talk kind of maybe being a little bit more conversant with the crab species.
When you walk away, you're going to know a lot about the crab species, and you're going to know what they look like when they're babies, and you're going to know how they get to be as big and edible as you know what they are.
Now, these are your own images that you're bringing to the
presentation. Yeah, most of these are my images that I've taken either out in the field, Bering Sea, or Southeast Alaska, or in my laboratory.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then tell us about the prawns that you're going to talk about. First of all, where are the spots?
Well, the spots are on the back of the carapace. The spot prawn is a real delicacy around Southeast Alaska.
Yeah.
They're fished all through around here. They closed the fishery for personal use around Juneau 11A. So for those who have a secret spot prawn spot, we're not fishing those right now. But spot prawns are, I'm not going to tell all their secrets, but they get to be quite large. Mm. And they're just one of a number of what are called pandallid shrimp that are interesting and that they all start out as boys. And then they all become girls.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting twist on the story.
Mm-hmm.
You came into to marine science through your study of hormones.
I did.
In graduate school, huh?
Yeah, I was at UC Davis studying human hormones and reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved over to crab hormones and reproduction and growth. And it's a very similar problem, but I just was more aligned with marine biology. And so my PhD, while it's in biochemistry and endocrinology, my deep love is the ocean, diving, and marine biology.
Mm-hmm. So when you decided, you came up to Juneau in, 15 or so years ago,
mm-hmm.
To join the UAS faculty, did they bring you in to specifically enhance their marine biology program about shrimp and prawns, or were you hired?
That was opportunistic. They wanted a physiologist, and they probably would have gone with a fish or a crab or some other type of physiologist, but my skill set matched what they desired, and they have a really great wet lab, and it just made sense to get people there that use the dive facility and brought animals into the wet lab. So it's been a good fit.
Can you compare the opportunity to do the research that you've done here and like that with what would have happened had you gone somewhere else? Do we have a unique fit for you here?
It's an amazingly unique fit. I've been able to take part in submersible crab work down in near Petersburg. Alaska just provides great opportunities. It's a small school, so I'm allowed to take part in any type of research involved in marine physiology that I'm expert in. And so the position is really quite unique.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which I would imagine allows you to contribute to the literature in some very unique ways as well.
Yep. I write at least a paper or two a year, and most of my work is on the fisheries, how physiology applies to understanding the life history of snow crab and tanner crab and Dungeness crab. But my interest, what I'll talk about tonight, really isn't going to be a lot of the data involved in the life history of crabs. It'll be more visual and just explaining the things that most people don't know about these animals.
My suspicion is that in a certain academic circle, people from around the planet would probably know who Sherry Timoney is. Is that true?
Well, that is true.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my husband doesn't quite believe it, but people in Israel and France and South America know my work.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because of that unique match between your skill set and the fact that we are surrounded by such a wonderful gift of sea life.
Here. And most people don't really think about crabs and shrimp having hormones and dealing with the raging hormones that humans might have to deal with.
Well, tonight is an opportunity to find out a little bit more about that area. So this is the Fireside Lecture. It is tonight at the Glacier Visitors Center, 6:30, and then a repeat of the same program at 8 p.m. UAS Professor Sherry Timoney is going to talk about crabs and spot prawns and their secret hormone-driven lives, a program to remember. Thank you so much for A, putting on the talk, and B, coming and telling us about it.
Thanks, Pat. Share when I get there.
to be at home. Ooh, when I die, let me be a bird.
Who is here in the studio with me. Thank you so much for gifting us with a little live music.
You're welcome.
So you're about to gift Juno with a little live music here tonight.
Huh? Yeah, we're playing tonight.
Yeah, Thunder Mountain High School, I think, at 8 o'clock tonight, right?
That's right, with my band.
Yeah, and who all's in the band?
We've got my brother on fiddle, mandolin, and viola, and Adam Dobres on electric guitar, acoustic guitar, ukulele, mandolin, and Sam Howard on upright bass, and they all sing beautifully, and
yeah, they certainly do. I've seen some video on the web, and it's a nice, solid sound.
Oh,
really
thank
is.
You.
Yeah. So, out of Winnipeg, but around the world recently, I think. Huh?
Yeah,
been on tour a little bit.
We've been traveling a whole lot.
Yeah. Where was the last? Where were the last five?
The last five?
Yeah. Just
well, we were in Petersburg last night.
Uh-huh.
And then before that, we were in. Well, in the Northwest, we played Portland, Tenasket, Washington, of all places, Port Angeles. Before that, we were in the Midwest. And then, before that, all over the place, East Coast, West Coast, Europe. So it's kind of been nonstop.
How do the audiences respond to the singer-songwriter that's in you there?
The response has been great, I feel. Very encouraged.
Yeah, a lot of people go to a concert, I think, expecting to hear a song that they've already heard in many ways. People are real comfortable with that.
Well, yeah, but I think that might be changing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are really interested in the singer-songwriter genre. I mean, it's become a lot more popular. I think people, a well-chosen cover never goes astray. We try and throw a couple of those in just for that, you know, familiarity, I suppose. But no, people are very receptive to original music, which is very cool.
Now, you started out classically trained, but then shifted over at some point into singer-songwriting, and along the way picked up the stringed instruments, which you didn't start with.
No, I didn't start with them. My brother and sisters all did. They played, I mentioned my brother, violin and viola, and my sister played cello, and my other sister is a wonderful violinist. But for some reason I didn't take to a stringed instrument right away, and I played piano and sang. I always loved singing. When I was a teenager, though, I discovered folk music, and that's what really changed it for me. I discovered all kinds of folk music, lots of different styles of traditional music, Celtic and bluegrass and old-timey music and French-Canadian music, and I loved it. And I especially loved Celtic music because it was well-suited to my voice, which is more delicate than say, an operatic voice, and that's, you know, it became clear to me that my path wasn't going to be opera. It was going to be something different. And that was, I mean, that was fun to find a niche for myself. And then, of course, that kind of led to songwriting. And my songwriting is kind of influenced by traditional music, but it's, I also kind of write my own rules as well.
Yeah, you use a lot of what would be country and Western instrumentation in underneath, but it's not you're not doing country.
No, but I'd say there's some country tinges there. Mm-hmm. We're a string band.
Sure. Yeah.
And we play a little bit of country. We play old timey music, and the boys are all influenced by bluegrass music. So I don't call myself a country singer. It's funny, when we go to Europe, when we go to England, people call us country. So I think it's all relative. I think it's where you are, people sort of hear it different ways.
I knew from your biography online that you had gone into Celtic music, because at one point you learned how to play the boran, which is an Irish drum.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I used to sing in a Celtic band.
Ah.
It was my first band, Scrooge McDuck, based out of Winnipeg, which was sort of the predecessor to the Ducks. That band. But yeah, I taught myself to play the baron because I wanted something to do when they were playing fiddle tunes. I was the lead singer, but I wanted to contribute to the tunes. So.
Yeah. So then how did the Wailing Jennies come about?
Well, Scrooge McDuck broke up, and at that point I had started to write songs, and so I basically had a dream of singing three-part harmony with two other women, and so I approached a couple of other songwriters in Winnipeg, and before we knew it, we were a band. And now Nikki Mehta and I are still in the band. We're the two founding members, with New York-based Heather Massey as our third or alto. It's 12 years now for us.
Yeah, so you and the Jennies are still performing.
Oh,
even
absolutely.
Though you've gone solo with four albums now, I think.
I've only released two of my own albums. I have a little vinyl 7-inch coming out soon. But we all do our own thing. That was always part of our philosophy as a band when we started. Is we wanted to honor all the individuals in the band and all the projects. And that we are a part of, and so Nikki is a mother of twins now, and Heather also has a baby, so they're busier with motherhood. But Nikki's recording an album, and Heather just released a new album, so I guess we're all lifers. We're all lifers and perhaps workaholics.
Ruth Moody tonight, 8 o'clock at Thunder Mountain High School. So come on out and listen to some great music.
Attention artists, businesses, and galleries, it's time to get ready for March 1st Friday. Please send us a picture and short description of your artist's work for our online First Friday Art Guide. Please send your information to arts@ktoo.org, and don't forget to use the guide at ktoo.org as you make your First Friday plans. That's a picture and a bio to arts@ktoo.org.
Hey, aren't mobbed out tonight.
It is definitely time to get ready for First Friday, and my next guest is here to explain one of the activities that's going to be happening tonight at First Friday, along with a sort of a live on-the-air demonstration. So focus the camera over here on the guy across the table from me.
Welcome. Yeah, just mean two words, free beer.
Yeah, okay.
There you go. That's what you need to know about First Friday at the Depot.
Yeah, Andy Klein, who used to be one of ours, and now he's one of theirs. He's working over at the Alaska Brewery and doing a great job introducing new brews to us.
Thanks, Pat. Great to be here.
Today you got something a little bit strange here.
We are getting a lot of reaction to this. This is our brand new Jalapeno Imperial IPA. It's part of our pilot series. So we have about three pilot series brews that come out every year. Raspberry Wheat's one of the pilot series beer. Our Barley Wine's one of the pilot series beer. Our Troppelbach and Imperial Reds. And this is called the Imperial IPA Jalapeno style. This is a cool rendering of Mount St. Augustine on the front of the bottle. And yeah, it's a double IPA, so it's an 8.5% IPA, high, you know, reasonably high alcohol content IPA, but brewed with jalapeno, fresh, all fresh jalapeno peppers brewed in the brewing process.
So now you're growing these jalapenos there in the brewery in the back, right?
We get them shipped in, but from there, it's all okay. And, yeah, so we're getting a lot of reactions from this already, preliminarily. It's just getting out to market right now, but even the first reviews that are coming out, people are really liking it. For folks who are interested in maybe tasting it or maybe a little unsure, the kind of thing I would say about the taste profile of it is that it is not over the top hot. It's a very subtle jalapeno flavor. There's a lot of actual, our brewer is really interested in bringing out the actual flavor and aroma of the pepper without all the heat of the pepper. So it's not like one of those things that you're just going to, it's just going to torture your mouth when you're drinking it.
All
You'll
right.
feel a little bit of a warming burn.
Yeah, I'm hearing
end.
All this. I'm hearing all this.
Yes.
So, Andy, I'm going to put you to the test here. I want to see this happen.
Here it is.
Okay.
We've got this beautiful bottle here.
Okay, and this is it's the cool. opening on the mic, so
there
you'll
go. Get it up to the mic.
It is. Okay, nice sound. Nice
yes,
sound,
yeah. And look at that, nice, lovely. And I'm going to pass this not over the board. I'm going to pass this to our assistant,
yeah.
Jeff Brown. Here.
Okay, Jeff is
our lovely assistant, Jeff Brown, is
Thank
in the
you.
Studio with
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Jeff also, I think, requires a bit of a taste, perhaps. A little quality control, he was saying.
So. Okay, so a sort of a, well, not a dark, a sort of a reddish tinge.
Yeah, a
color.
Copper color, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
nice.
Kind of a fair, yeah, copper color to it. It's, for people familiar with our Hopothermia that just came out this year,
uh-huh.
it's a fairly similar malt.
So it's going to be very hop forward.
It's pretty hop forward.
Keep in mind now, I'm a balanced beer guy.
Yes,
so.
Right. But that's what people are loving about.
A little nose
them.
Here.
Yes, very good.
Okay, now I'm the yeah, other's little thing back in there.
Do you see
yeah.
these smell
yeah,
that? Isn't
yeah,
that
I'm
nice?
Smelling the hop, but then on the edge of it,
there's a peppery, there's
yeah,
a pepperness.
Okay. All right. All right. So now first sip. Here we go. Okay. So far it's a hoppy beer.
Tastes like a hoppy mm-hmm. beer, like a double IPA, but
ay caramba!
Ay.
There it is.
Catching you at the back. Just at the back. And like I said, not even peppery really at the back, but you'll taste a warming and feel kind of a warming in
yeah.
your throat.
Yeah, there the it end. Is. There it
and
is.
That's it. That's yeah. the jalapeno
okay.
IPA. So a really fun taste sensation there. Like I said, a big beer. It's the pilot series. It's in limited quantities. It's only in the 22-ounce bombers and on draft. So
mm-hmm.
it's just in this big size bottle beer, just like all of our pilot series. So it's out in stores now.
Now, it's on draft.
On draft.
In most of the bars around town. But you can also go over to the brewery,
yes.
and there's a sampling bar there.
There is, yeah. Go to the gift shop right at the brewery in Lemon Creek, on Shawn Drive there in Lemon Creek. And, yeah, you know, we just allow people to come up in nice, actually pretty nice-sized little sample glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And
6 ounces, I think.
Yeah, let yeah. folks just...
A limit of six.
Yeah, we have a limit, right?
Drinking sensibly.
Yeah,
here.
That's
yeah.
right.
Okay.
And we have this on draft. We have a bunch of our Rough Draft series on draft. We just came out with the second time we've come out with our Hoarfrost IPA. Which is a Pilsen malt-based IPA, and with Hallentauer hops, so a really kind of a traditional German-tasting beer, but it's an ale, not a lager, so it's
mm-hmm.
our take on what that might taste like. That's a really exciting beer. I really love that beer as well. Are you feeling the burn right now a little bit?
Well, it's
See,
there,
little,
but it's more refreshing
right now,
than burning. And I had expected when I saw the picture of the exploding
yes,
volcano on the front of the bottle there that we were talking about
well, we know that
a
Saint
test
Augustine,
of strength here.
St. Augustine's more of a simmer.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that volcano just
yeah.
simmers out there.
Right.
But this is what always happens to me when I drink this. I'm noticing right now while talking to you, I'm getting a little bit of a, how about you, Jeff? You feeling a little bit of warming in the throat especially? Cowabunga.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for bringing up the gift shop. That's right. You can always go to the gift shop out there. We've got a bunch of our Rough Drafts on as well there, and then all of our regular year-round beers, and as well as the pilot series, and that's the Jalapeno IPA.
Oh, Andy, there's a very specific aspect to that gift shop that I want to absolutely stress, and that is sitting on the counter just to the left of where you receive the service from the guy behind there with the taps and everything. There's a jar, and that jar is where you're not charged for the beer that you drink out
right.
there. So that means there's a little bit left in your wallet
yes.
after you've had your sip. So the that money is goes in a very specific way to one charity in Juneau each year.
That's right. So we choose our crew.
When you say all, we, that's it's a vote.
It's a
right?
vote. The yeah. crew individually, we put in a little ballot. I built a little ballot box, and everyone puts it on a slip of paper. We put together a list of the nonprofits that operate in Juneau. So it's a long list, and we have a description of all the different nonprofits on there. We pick, and we have the crew pick a new charity every year. Last year it was Southeast Alaska Independent Living, SAIL, mm-hmm. which does incredible work, and they were terrific, wonderful nonprofit partners to have all through the year. And this year, it's an announcement. Actually, the press release just went out 15 minutes ago, Pat.
All right.
Here it is.
So here it is.
Fresh as the headlines.
K2 exclusive.
Alaskan Brewing Company this year has chosen Trail Mix as
right.
its nonprofit partner, and we're really excited, and they are too, to be beneficiaries of that tip jar. You know, and last year, that tip jar there at the gift shop alone raised $11,000 for sale.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an amazing thing. We also do No Umbrellas, and that's a great event for us. And we also do something up at Eagle Crest every year. And this year, we're going to be sponsoring the Slush Cup. We're going to have a beer garden at the Slush Cup coming up April 12th.
With and the jalapeno beer for warming up the skiers on the slope, right?
That's a good idea.
Yeah,
Pompothermia, for sure, as well,
yeah,
for that
yeah.
warming sensation.
Yes, sir. Okay.
yeah.
So
we're excited about that.
And so these are the beers of the moment. This is Alaskan Jalapeno, which is right now available.
Yeah, just came out.
Okay, and there are a couple of beers floating around that are on draft in the area?
Yeah, the Rough Draft series. So
yeah.
we have the Hoarfrost just came out as part of the Rough Draft series. The Sweetheart Ale was the last one that came out February 14th for St. Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have the Taco River Red is just finishing up. And also people might be seeing on draft some places the Big Mountain Pale Ale. That was another one of our pale ales, a really popular one, uses a dominant Simcoe hop profile, really good stuff. So, yeah, all those are floating out there, and they're available all the time. And you'll be able to taste the jalapeno IPA if you're listening on the radio and want to taste it, but you're downtown. Go to the Downtown Depot, the Brewery Depot. We're having First Friday, so we're doing – the Wool Pullers are going to be playing, and also going to have the our guest solo artist, Mackenzie Merrill, is going to be there as well. So really awesome music and great times, but we're going to be pouring the jalapeno IPA. We're also going to be pouring our regular IPA and our stout, which is a fun beer to think about coming up on St. Paddy's Day. I think the stout's a great St. Paddy's Day. Grins great with corned beef.
Are we talking about the oatmeal stout?
The oatmeal stout.
My favorite beer.
There
beer
you
company.
Go.
Yeah,
so what are the characteristics you like about it?
Oh, the oatmeal stout? Well, it's not Guinness,
right.
which is actually a good thing,
yeah.
because no one can be Guinness, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
That's it. But it has a really delightful balance to it, and that's what I look for in a beer.
I love the mouthfeel of it. That oatmeal gives it this creamy quality.
Yeah.
You know, the head and the beer itself is very creamy, and so yeah. It's a fun beer. People actually love it as a dessert beer.
Yeah, that's what the other aspect of it is, it's not a knock-you-over stout, and too many stouts there's something, you know, manly about drinking stout or something,
right.
and so they want you to get a big hit from it, and that stout is well balanced,
yeah.
and it just kind of goes down nice.
It's award winning, yeah. you know. Just picked up another European Beer Star Award last year. It came and got a silver medal last year, and that's an international competition. So. So you'll have an opportunity to taste that as well. Also, there's lots of like sale items happening at the brewery Downtown Depot. So if you come down, I will pour you a free beer. I promise.
Okay. Well, so Andy Klein, thank you so much for coming in. Tell
Thanks,
us
Pat.
About this.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you again for bringing us the beer.
Yes.
You betcha. Monday on Juneau Afternoon, we're going to be hearing about the CERT workshops. Alita Buss will come in to give us a preview of the Mudrooms event. Lenny Gilbertson will be here from Big Brothers Big Sisters. We'll talk to some local youth about their participation in Arctic Winter Games. Joan Partis will be hosting all that on Monday here on KTOO. So tune in for Juneau Afternoon. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Slitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and thank you very much, listeners like you. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered here on KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska.